This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Before the Duggar arrests and the federal convictions, the Institute in Basic Life Principles, the IBLP, taught that fathers had complete authority over their families and used religion to say that being silent meant being obedient. To understand what's happening with this family now, it helps us look at the system that influenced them. And we are going to do just that today in a very long conversation about the IBLP and the Duggars and everything in the ecosystem that surrounds it. And to do just that, one of our favorite guests of Robin and myself, Siobhan Scott, is with us, psychotherapist and author, to help us break all of this down. You have such a unique insight into a world like this because you grew up in a fundamentalist religious system. And by the way, if you want to learn about Siobhan's experiences in that, here's her book, Nightbird. Very, very powerful and very raw. I do highly suggest checking that out. When you look at what the IBLP was actually teaching, the total parental authority, the submission doctrine. And you heard the news this week of these new charges that have come out. What came to your mind? What do you recognize, Siobhan, when you hear these stories that most people watching this are missing? That just doesn't come to their mind.
It's an extreme cult. I heard about it when I was a kid growing up, and the particular faith churches that I was involved in were extreme and were cult-like, mm-hmm. but this was above and beyond, you know, the homeschooling, the dressing kids alike, this television show, which I never watched because, frankly, all this stuff just made my skin crawl. Mm-hmm. But it's a cult with total psychological control. Obedience equals holiness. It's black and white thinking. You know, you either do it our way or you're on Satan's side. And yeah. So it's based upon fear, raising kids in this really restrictive environment where they have no voice, they never question authority. Thinking is dangerous, and the outside world they're completely cut off from it. So it's incredibly disruptive to normal child development.
You know, Siobhan, you brought up a really powerful word there that a few of our listeners tuned into the last couple of days, and that's the homeschooling aspect of it. And I'd love for you to kind of talk about the homeschooling aspect, because there's homeschooling, then there's indoctrination, and that's what this is really. So could you explore for us what kind of homeschooling / indoctrination that was kind of being exposed to here, and also, you know, maybe in your own experience as well?
And I want to caveat real quick. We're not, you know, poo-pooing homeschooling as a whole.
That's why I want to go down this road. Yeah, so exactly. The difference between homeschooling.
There's a big difference.
And education and then indoctrination. Big difference between education and indoctrination.
Yes. That's an excellent point, because when my kids were little in California, a lot of people were homeschooling. And it was looked at as a way to give kids a more customized experience. People still took their kids to activities, to museums. They got together with other families. So it wasn't this motivation to keep them pure and to keep them obedient. And so, yes, you're talking about entirely different families with entirely different motives. It can be done in a very benign, even healthy way. But in this case, I guarantee you, the kids were drilled on the Bible, the Bible, the Bible. And there's a whole curriculum put out for Christian homeschoolers, which may have something called science, but it's basically just regurgitating the Bible and calling it science. Everything is based upon their interpretation of scripture. So very different.
I want to, you know, when people watch this television show, The 19 Kids and Counting, or whatever incarnation of it was in its season when it ran for 10 years on TLC, so many people watch this show and they found something warm and fuzzy about it. I think a lot of us were like, it was nails on a chalkboard. It was creepy. It was weird. It felt odd. It felt off. But for so many people, and I remember watching, like, good-hearted people, people that were not cult members, that were not abusive to their families, that were not horrible individuals, they looked at it, and the way it was portrayed, obviously we saw the very best version of them on the television show. There wasn't like, and now what's going on behind those doors? It was very much, you know, this is, look at this. Isn't this cute? Just like sometimes when people, you know, stop at the Amish pie stand, isn't this cute? Isn't this lovely? You have zero control over your own life, but these pies are delicious. It felt like that to a certain extent. Why do you think it is? Why did so many people eat up the Duggars and what was clearly very much a coercively controlled lifestyle? People found it as being very, very homey and colloquial.
Yeah, it really is a mystery to me. I should find some of these episodes and go back and do an analysis of the careful editing that went on. Because we know, I mean, lots of evidence, kids raised in fear, where their ability to think is stamped out, they do not develop normally, and they end up with a lot of anxiety and depression and relationship problems. But obviously that was hidden. And if this was presented as some kind of an ideal, people must have been inspired to copy aspects of it, or at least try. And I think that's insidious.
Yeah, the fear factor is major because, so I've just about finished a book that Jill Duggar wrote, and as well as the Shiny Happy People series on Amazon Prime. And there's some really striking things in here about the education system, about like, and again, this is just quoting from this, it's not my opinion. These are just quotes from people that are in that system saying that the largest amount of math they were taught was fractions, because that's the only thing they needed to be taught in order to cook was fractions. Mm-hmm. And then Jill herself and others, the fear they had of creating a sin as defined by IBLP, they had nightmares of burning in hell.
Yes.
I mean, the fear factor was so massive at such a young age for that control, because it is really a control aspect of absolutely everything.
And I identify with that one as a child. Mm-hmm. I remember by age 5, I had definitely an anxiety disorder from all of it, and laying awake at night imagining hell, and I had terrible insomnia and stuff that I was kind of wired for anxiety, and it still affects me to this day. Mm-hmm. How do you talk yourself out of this automatic thinking that you go into, that there's this force that's going to punish you by that? It's horrible for kids.
I hear you. You obviously grew up in a much more extreme religious environment than I did. I grew up in a religious environment as well. I grew up Lutheran.
For the most part,
you know, they're harmless. You know, they make fish in the basement of the church, and they're really, for the most part, not bad. But there are, in any group of religious folks, there's some that are more extreme than others. But there's also a lot of things that go on, and I don't know that this is what is going on today in the Wisconsin Synod or Missouri Synod Lutheran churches. Those are the two that I had been parts of as a child. But there were so many things that were just second nature, that they just did with the kids. They just told the kids, that were part of the teachings, the Sunday schools, the daily lessons, all that were just, well, this is what we teach. And nobody thought anything weird of it. I mean, I remember coloring books. I would love to try and get my hands on some of the coloring books from the 70s and 80s that they gave kids in these things. I remember like drawing Saul's wife turning into a pillar of salt as they ran away from Sodom and Gomorrah. And you're like literally drawing the fire and like, can I borrow the blue? I think like kind of a light blue might be appropriate for Saul's wife that just turned into a pillar of salt. Well, why did you turn? because she looked back. She had the horrible sin of looking back at the destruction that they were running from. And because God said don't, well, guess what? You're a salt lick now. I mean, this is the shit that they taught children. I mean, I know it's in the Bible that way, but they the indoctrination of this fear, you know, in kind of a happy-go-lucky way, because you're coloring this, and then 5 minutes later, oh, animal cracker time.
Mm-hmm. Well, they weaponized religion.
Yes, mm-hmm. Completely. And it's not just the extreme groups like the IBLP that do these sort of things. Sure. This was just mainstream little Lutheran church in the neighborhood that, you know, and nobody thought anything weird of it. The parents didn't think anything weird of it. And I don't blame them, because everybody had been indoctrinated into this sort of a world. Mm-hmm. But it's like every religion to a certain extent, or every version of whatever you have, they go to the death and destruction and the fear factors so early, or at least they used to for a long time.
Yeah.
With the young children, the damage that must do. Can you speak to that?
Well, the one that used to torment me, was it Jacob? I may get the Old Testament names mixed mm-hmm. up, even though at one time I could have told you all of them.
I get them mixed up now too.
Jacob, who was to prove his love by God by murdering, sacrificing his son Isaac.
Oh, yeah, that's a fun. I've done the coloring page on that.
Yeah.
And, he's like on the altar.
laid him down on the altar and had the knife ready. And then the angel stopped him and said, okay, you don't have to do it. You've proven your loyalty here. I was like, who could I kill? What if I were in that position? What if I were the one that was going to be sacrificed? And that just horrified me. Talk about, I mean, if they would just stick with Jesus in the New Testament, right?
Well, like what kind of, I mean, if you're an adult and you're trying to understand the story and the greater, bigger 10,000 foot or 100,000 foot overview lesson of these parables, an adult mind can understand, I mean, even though a lot of it's pretty wonky, you can kind of get, oh, okay, I kind of get the point they're trying to make here. But at seven, you're just like, oh, he's going to kill his kid and he's waiting mm-hmm. for the angel to say stop. Or mm-hmm. you know, it's the kids aren't going to get it. But they seem to miss that children aren't going to understand this shit, and they take it all way too literal.
Literal.
Or they're doing it on purpose, because, again, it goes to control and fear, which becomes a part of the indoctrination. You know, what was really striking, you know, in the series and learning about this was the authority and how that authority worked in that. And, you know, Tony put up the graphic for a number of days, you know, the umbrellas of authority. But the infallibility of authority is where they gain their control. And because I was really thinking about this. So here's Jill, the oldest daughter in the Duggar family. How did she come to break from this? And so this is going to be, this leading to my question for Siobhan. She was able to break, again, no psychoanalyst on my side, but what had happened was she saw a chink in her father's armor when he deceived her intentionally the day before she got married, and he connived her into signing the contract that obligated her in her entire life, photographs of the birth, delivery, wedding, everything, without compensation except to the father for 5 years. And so he deceived her. And so when she finally, this comes to light and discovers this, that's the chink that said, oh my God, she didn't think this consciously, but this is where the chink happened. The authority is fallible. Mm-hmm. And then the whole thing started crumbling. So without mm-hmm. that, how does someone recognize internally, if they even can, that this system is broken?
Yeah. Yeah. At some point, many people who are raised under this kind of religious system, they start to develop critical thinking skills, and a light bulb comes on. Something goes too far for them. Now, that doesn't happen for everybody, and some people just grow up and replicate the pattern. But I know for me, the light bulb started coming on for me at about 18, and that was the group I was involved in was big into faith healing. And if you had faith, you would be healed. If you didn't have faith, you wouldn't. So if somebody died or had a child that died, it was their fault. And this started to not add up to me. That was a line that went too far. And then, of course, my mother, when I was 16, died of cancer. And we were all praying. We were doing all the right things. You know, we called the 700 Club helpline. They were praying. She's been healed. Well, she wasn't healed, and she died. And that was a real blow for me that I think made the light bulb come on. You know, this stuff just doesn't work. And there was another case where a child had leukemia, a little boy at age 5. And of course, they were praying and he was going to be healed. And he wasn't. He died. And then they said, they took it to, well, don't, to the parents, don't get the body embalmed because God is going to raise him up at the funeral and he's going to come back to life and be resurrected. Well, guess what? That didn't happen either.
There was no zombie?
Yeah. So
oh, what a letdown.
Fortunately.
And I will throw, though, there are, you know, whether it's prayer or the positive energy, there actually are studies where the amount of positive energy groups and organizations put out through meditation actually can affect things. So I will throw there is some pseudoscience on that out there.
I have not read anything scientific that impressed me on it.
It's interesting. So Joe Dispenza in his works, Dr. Joe Dispenza, what the hell's the name? Becoming Supernatural actually talks a lot about what he found through the studies of that. I digress on this thing. I don't want to discount people's faith and their prayers, what I'm trying to do. And the power of prayer.
And this is just my position, right? Coming from my angle. A lot of people find prayer soothing. It's meditative. It helps them cope. It can serve a psychological purpose for them. I have a dear friend who's a therapist, and she said, you know, I don't really believe in God, but I still pray because it makes me feel better.
Yes.
If it makes you feel better, do it. Mm-hmm. And I do not have all knowledge, and I can't say that there's never an effect from it. But certainly in my growing up experience, I believed in it. I was taught that. But I saw that it did not fit with reality. Right. And fortunately, I was reading a lot and I was open to new ideas. I went to the library all the time. And of course, if you've read my book, you know, I was married and a mother at 16 because of the faith. And I was breaking free by developing the ability to think my own thoughts. And at some point, something happens for people, whatever it may be, where, as you say, they see a chink in the armor and thinking starts to kick in. And once they start to develop their own ability to critical think, they can look back on the whole thing and make an assessment of it. And that's often where people say, you know, I don't swallow this anymore.
And they step away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that damn thinking. They don't like it when you start
they
doing
do
that.
Not.
Curiosity.
They
you know?
Do not.
You're out. I mean, you become the black sheep when you start asking questions. Yes. And they just kind of know, well, we lost one. This
one. Then you get shunned.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. I mean, you really do. You start to get looked at as like, oh, well, maybe the kids shouldn't play with that one because that one thinks.
And you know what they do? So, you know, in the Amish culture, they shun you, which is a very powerful thing. You're cut off. And what they did in IBLP, you know, and Jim Bob said this all the time, you will no longer be under the protective umbrella.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so they shamed you with fear of no longer being protected. Again, that fear.
Yeah.
I mean, they love their umbrellas in IBLP.
No
I mean, that's
kidding.
That's their whole damn thing. I want to take it back for a second. We're talking about Jim Bob, you know, allegedly deceiving her, essentially, with that contract on her, I believe it was her wedding, or right before the birth, wedding was
day before the wedding.
Day before the wedding, where it was basically sign off everything. And, you know, you're thinking your father has your best interest at heart. I mean, this is what you've been raised to believe. Yeah. And she signs the damn thing. And it being deceptive, and depending how you're looking at it, one could go, oh, Jim Bob is sitting there in the corner going, I'm going to deceive her. I'm going to go sneak this in, and hopefully she doesn't realize what she's signing. I don't know that he's sitting there thinking that, you know, because I think, in my opinion, he's seeing it as normal. He's seeing this is just the modality. This is how it works. I don't think he's not over in the corner being evil. Oh, how can I deceive my children? That's why I think when they're confronted with these realities and these challenges from society saying, this isn't okay. This was pretty shitty what you did over here. That's not how they saw it all when they were doing it. And they're also unable to do a whole lot of introspectively looking at their actions and go, hey, maybe I should see it from a different way. Luckily, the girls did, and they for a long time just saw it the same way that Jim Bob allegedly sees it, as I'm looking out for my children. It's part of the umbrella. It's part of the system. They are breaking the system if they want to get out from the umbrella. And if they're going to do that, well, then according to my belief system, then, well, good luck to them. This is why you get the stories where, well, your inheritance is going to be reduced and threats and this and that. But again, they're not looking at it as a threat or necessarily. It is 1,000% control, but they don't see it as that because they've redefined it in their mind as something else, as love, as the direction, as they're the shepherd guiding the flock.
And it's also ordained by God. Yeah. Also ordained by God.
Yeah.
That's who said it. That's who the, you know, when you look at their website and you go to their videos on authority, that's exactly what happens, is they talk about the authority of God, and God made this hierarchy and structure according, and you must obey to it, because if you don't, well, then you're going to burn in hell. Again, the fear factor comes in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Then you add words in like, well, it's witchcraft if you look at something other than what I'm saying. Let's talk about this, because this obviously, I'm going to say, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, it seems the Duggar family doesn't quite understand contraceptives. They don't seem to either believe in them or understand their use.
It's a sin.
And they have deliberately kept sex education out of their homeschool curriculum. They even went on the 19 kids and counting, when Josh got married, there was that cute little segment where they fumbled through the idea of sex. And I think I kind of know what I'm talking about, Dad, even though he's already diddled his sisters, and we all, and Jim Bob knew that. But for TV, it's like, oh, he's innocent. He knows nothing about this. Let's talk about that a little bit, because they keep the education out of their curriculum. But clearly, in this family, some of the boys figured it out pretty early of what their parts did or what they were interested in. What does that specific deprivation do to a developing young adult when you're not going to educate them and you're going to keep them completely isolated from society, where they might be able to pick pieces up here and there?
Mm-hmm. It really stunts their development, because they don't know what normal is. They don't have boundaries. And particularly for the daughters, how do they even have a language to report what's happened, right? Mm-hmm. Because secrecy is a virtue. And girls typically in these kinds of systems have no power. They have no voice. They are diminished. They're not as valuable as the boys. And it's something that really sets them up. Boys don't know what normal, do they understand what masturbation is? You know, do they even have a clue on who it's okay to touch and who it isn't okay to touch? You know, they don't have the information and the knowledge. So they really are handicapped. And it's just a petri dish for awful things to happen sexually.
You know, this we talked about this before the show even started, this non-correcting doctrine that people have. And the author Noah Havari, who I've quoted a few times, who wrote the book Sapiens and Homo Deus, and then his last book is Nexus, and that's how human beings communicate. Systems that actually are self-correcting systems that can evolve, both documentary as well as spoken and everything, are healthy systems. But when you have a system like this one that is not self-correcting, these things happen. But it still blows my mind. And so, Siobhan, how is it that a father can now have two sons that have done horrendous things to their sisters and others, most likely caused because of this system, this non-correcting system of education, and yet he still doubles down on that non-correcting system? He is still involved with the church. He is still doing these things, yet it has completely wrecked lives. How is it that someone does not see that and correct and move on and grow?
It's amazing the ability that some people have to delude themselves and to not see reality. Some people are really good at it. And the ways that people will rationalize their kids' horrendous behavior and their own horrendous behavior. And the other thing that's occurred to me We know about a certain amount of abuse. There could be lots more abuse that went on that we don't know about, because often in these families too, it's not only the girls that are molested, boys are molested by older brothers, you know, and that's something that people really feel a lot of shame about and tend not to talk about. Sometimes they never talk about it, or they talk about it decades later as they're older.
And they don't even know, because they don't even have the words for it. Right. That's mind blowing. They don't even equip them with words. Yep. To understand its abhorrent behavior.
Yeah.
It just blows your head.
It's the magic of the IBLP. You know? I mean, it's just, it's nuts. There's so much more we're about to get into here. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our conversation on this. And weigh in on Substack and YouTube. We'd love for you to do just that. Josh Duggar is in federal prison. He's been for a while. Joseph Duggar was arrested just the other week on charges he reportedly admitted to twice. Their father, Jim Bob, allegedly knew about Josh's abuse of his daughter since 2002, but he chose to go to church elders instead of police, allegedly. Later, he testified under oath that he couldn't remember those events. I don't know. I don't remember. A federal judge said that was not believable and said, get out of my courtroom. You know, Mr. Godley getting kicked out of the court. Siobhan Scott is with us. She has 30 years of experience working with people who've committed violence in these sort of settings. This conversation looks at the psychological issues behind these actions as we break it all down. Weigh in with your thoughts in the comments section. Siobhan, let's talk about this. When you look at Josh Duggar's pattern, the other brother, the one who had the accusations, who did things to his sisters, and then later was downloading CSAM material at his used car lot, living a double life as a public values advocate. He was out there on the Christian circuit or the IBLP circuit, trying to tout himself as being this you know, religious juggernaut. He's this great figure one should try and strive to be, yet he's doing all of these things in the background. He was also on Ashley Madison as well, cheating on his wife with porn stars. But this is religious I mean, what the hell is going on here? And there's just so many things. What's going on with him? And what's going on with the family that still says, this is working out lovely. We're going to keep backing him up.
Mm-hmm. It's almost delusional, isn't it? This kind of break within a person that they can compartmentalize that effectively. The other interesting thing about this type of faith is that people tell themselves they can commit really awful sins, if we want to just call it a sin, but then just pray for forgiveness and it's all wiped clean. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that if you could sit and get this person to talk with you, there was probably a cycle where he maybe even had kind of an addictive cycle with certain kinds of sexual behavior that, you know, got him incarcerated. But he then could turn back to God and have a holy week where he didn't engage in any of that kind of thing. So it's kind of the splitting that they do internally between, well, the devil made me do it that week, but now I've prayed, I'm forgiven, and I can go back and be holy again. And so it's like they have not multiple personalities, but it's like they separate their internal self.
So Siobhan, I've seen both in the counterintelligence world, like, for example, in Russia, they actually created a Russian KGB colonel created an entire network of sparrows to do honey traps, basically. He created this because he abused women himself. And so he created this entire network for cover for him to do this abhorrent behavior. I'm curious, when you look at the origins of IBLP, does this look like a system was created just for this ends, using the justification of religion and twisting it for cover so they could actually do these horrendous things? I mean, because the entire thing seems so set up to abuse women that don't even know they're being abused because it doesn't have a definition, and to provide cover for those actions by their authority, their umbrellas, and fear.
Certainly can be. Certainly can be. And that would get into how conscious are they of, you know, having a hidden agenda here. Certainly could be. We see cases like that. But it's also possible, particularly for the younger kids, that they grow up in it and they just internalize it. And so they do it automatically without realizing that, oh, hey, I've created this system here where look at all the benefits I get from it.
I want to talk about the apology thing, because that seems to be how it all gets wiped away. And biblically speaking, you know, it does say, you know, ask for forgiveness from God, and then your sins will be forgiven. Yeah. If you admit for them, you atone for them, then okay, then you're okay, great. That's between the sinner and God. It says nothing about the damage that sin, if you will, did to other people, the path of chaos that they have gone down, and all of the wreckage that's in their wake. And so many folks, and it seemingly, it feels like, at least in this case too, Joseph allegedly admitted to what he did to the girl's father. The girl's father, this is brother number two now, this is a new one we're talking about. Then the father gets on the detective on the line, unbeknownst to Joseph. Joseph admits it again, apologizes again for what happened 6 years ago, and thinks, oh, well, you know, I apologized, I atoned for my sin. Case over, case clean,
to the work
everything's
camp.
Good. I mean, it's just, it's a system that's really designed to pretty much take a predator and okay, clean slate for you, and no accountability. It removes accountability by saying, Sky Daddy forgives you, and it doesn't really matter what else you did because Sky Daddy says it's okay. It was shitty. It was horrible. She's traumatized for the rest of her life. She'll have nightmares. She'll have issues with men in any relationship she ever has again. But because Sky Daddy says, I'm good, I'm good. So this is just insane. But we call it religion and it makes it all good. What does this specific pattern tell you about how he processed what he did? The fact that he was just so willing. I mean, I find that interesting too, that he was so willing to even go on a phone call and tell the dad, yeah, I did that, allegedly. You know, okay, I'm sorry. And most predators would be like, no, that's not, I don't know what she's, they're like, yep, did it.
That's reps. That's reps.
Yes, that is reps. Reps of when you say, yeah, did it, of no consequence either. What's your thoughts there?
It's weaponized forgiveness. And I think that is part of the teaching that you can fess up to something and everybody has to forgive you. They're supposed to forgive you. And that just wipes the slate clean as if it never happened. And people may do that on a weekly basis, right? They may do something horrible. On Sunday, they go to church. They say, you know, I'm sorry. And the slate is wiped clean. And the people that they offend against, let's say little girls growing up in this, they're taught that it is their spiritual duty to forgive. And, you know, my term definition for forgiveness is after reparations have been done, after hard work has been done, you may or may not, because it's not necessary to forgive someone, but you may come to a place where you can accept they did a very bad thing, but they've made reparations and there has been some consequences. And so I no longer carry this sense of hatred toward them, but I don't, you know, disavow what happened. But I think in the religious system like this, you're supposed to pretend it never happened and everything is hunky-dory. And so it's really weaponized and it's not healthy forgiveness in any way.
They fueled their entire economy by this. It's mind-blowing, still mind-blowing to me that what they did was, in order to make reparations, one of the things for making reparations is you sent them to the work camp at headquarters to do these projects. And so they had, so just think about it. If not saying all the kids involved here, but if a lot of your workforce is put into the workforce because they're making amends for these horrendous things they're doing, it becomes a self-fulfilling loop about how they sustain things. And also they have to pay. So here's how this economy, not saying the entire thing, but this in this one little portion here with Jim Bob and his family. So in order to make reparations for abusing your sisters, we're going to send you to the work camp that we got to pay for. So in other words, you're going to pay headquarters. You're going to give them a big chunk of check, and you're going to send your son there for a free work camp for 2 to 3 months, and then he's going to come back and do it again.
Right.
Oh, my God.
Well,
oh, my
drywall,
God.
You know, just Dix gets the predator out of you. You know, if you learn
yes.
how to do a little
no
money and taping.
No counseling, no therapy,
right.
especially for
right.
the girls. Nothing for the girls.
Right. And that's the kind of reparations I speak of when if you're going to have some kind of healthy forgiveness. It's where the person fully comes to understand what they have done. In this case, the sexual offenses, the predation, where they have treatment, they, you know, they work hard to be a very different person. They learn, they grow. And then at some point they can come to the victim and say, look, I really messed you up and I own it. And to never demand forgiveness that's supposed to happen, you know, because it may not. And either way, it's really the victim's process, whether they go there or not.
I found it really, really telling. And it was a stunning moment. It was in the doc that's out right now, The Shiny Happy People. It was of an IBLP conference, because they don't have a centered, church. It's all within their homes, and then they go and rent out conference centers, or they did. And there was one where they're all singing, it was all worth it in the end. Essentially, they're taught to believe that we're going to be persecuted and all the negative things that happen to us. Well, it's because we have to show how strong our faith is for God. And yes, there's going to be suffering because it's a sinful world, and it's just going to happen to us. So they kind of get used to thinking, well, bad things are going to happen. And when they do, well, that's just part of the plan. It was all worth it in the end. And that weaponized forgiveness that you brought up, I think that's a really powerful word, because that's really how they operate. Mm-hmm. It is the weaponized forgiveness, because they feel that, you know, I'm supposed to do it. I'm supposed to go and forgive no matter what. Mm-hmm. Or if you're the one who did the horrible thing, well, they're supposed to forgive me.
Right.
And then if they don't forgive me, then you can flip the script really quick and you become the victim and they become the predator, which is, you know, predatory behavior 101.
Yes.
But in this case, it's a religious way of thinking. Yes. It really is. It's amazing how just moving some of those blocks around creates a very different mindset on justifying the behavior to which they engage in.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I don't know that I have a question there, but it just kind of gets an observation
and
on it.
And just again, that whole mindset from that early grooming into this, the girls felt bad for Josh when his secret got out.
Yeah.
The victims felt bad for the perpetrator of horrendous things on them because it was leaked, mm-hmm. and it should never have been leaked.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much here where, well, it's not supposed to happen that way. I think it explains a lot. It explains a lot why Michelle Duggar was running out of her house the other day, allegedly. And we saw the video. I wasn't able to confirm whether this was current or was it filmed at a prior time when one of the children got busted for something. But I saw it. It was the first time I saw it. And it was some YouTuber or something that was sitting outside the house, not on the property. Michelle comes running out with her camera. You're not supposed to be here. This is her word. You're not supposed to be here, talking in her way. No, there's children. I'm protecting children. And I believe the blogger's response was something to the effect of like, maybe you should be more concerned about your son-in-law for that, considering everything that's going on right now. But there is this genuine shock, if you will, and disappointment in other human beings around them, that the attention might be drawn to them, that people might be looking at them going, what the hell are you doing? Mm-hmm. And that one would have this opinion. She seems genuinely perplexed and shocked by this. And I think anybody that sticks around in that system also adopts that same sort of mindset. And they never really seem to to catch on, yeah, there's something wrong here. There's a reason everybody's looking at you and pointing fingers, and it's not because you're the cute 19 kids anymore. It's because this is some sort of predatory system appears that has been running out of this family for years, and it's created monsters that have ruined the lives of several young girls by now. But why are you here? You're not supposed to be here. It's really interesting what they're able to tell themselves to continue, I guess, counting on, if you will.
Yeah, it's protect the system at all costs and deny reality to protect the system. Sacrifice your kids to protect the system. And it reminds me of people in those faith healing religions where they absolutely will not let their diabetic kids have insulin. You know, they won't take dying kids to the doctor. It's appalling, but they will protect the system before, I mean, they sacrifice their kids to it.
You know, Siobhan, you said, you know, when I was telling the anecdote about Jill and how she had the chink in the armor was exposed and everything started unraveling when she saw that her father wasn't being transparent with her with the signing of the contract. And you perfectly said it's that critical thinking. What can you do to such a systemic system to kind of get those chinks? Like, how can you inspire someone from the outside looking in to start that unraveling through some critical thinking, if anything?
It's really tough. And I think it comes from contact with the outside world in some way, either from reading. And that's one of my favorite books is Educated by Tara Westover, who was raised in a very cult family, a version of Mormonism. It was another offshoot of Mormonism, but it's just an absolutely superb book about her breaking away from it probably is very similar. I'm trying to think, is it worse than the Duggars? But similar. But horrendous things happened in her home. Her family didn't even let the kids have birth certificates. The children were birthed at home. They never saw doctors. They never went to a dentist. They, of course, never went to public school. But one of the older siblings in that family somehow got out and went to college. And he came back and had books into the home. And he encouraged Tara to start reading, to start thinking. And she went on to become a college professor and, you know, completely broke from her family. So title is Educated. And it's how she began to see reality because of contact from one brother who was breaking away intellectually. And so at some point, if you can get somebody who's outside of the cult connected with some of the kids in some way, and to just be curious and to start asking questions without overtly attacking the belief system, because people defend against that. But there's power in getting people to think, and sometimes just the right questions push that along.
Yeah, and it's so tough because, you know, they create their own documents, they create their own curriculum, they create the entire thing around their fear system that the outside world is. And it's funny how they say not to judge the outside world, but you can't have interaction with the outside world. I mean, it's a really fascinating control factor. Like, how do you, again, sparking that curiosity to get that critical thinking going? Because even the Duggars, I think I saw part of it too, is they had a book burning. You know, it's like, hey, you know, we got to remove all these bad influences because
they burned all their Disney stuff.
They burned all of Disney because Disney's horrendous. Can you imagine Disney?
Yes, Disney was the devil in the Duggars' life.
That was the faith I was brought up in. If kids, you know, let's say they were allowed to have a sleepover, and my kids, because I knew families that were this extreme, and maybe they would let the kids have a sleepover at my house, and if I let them watch an old VHS Disney movie, that was sin. You had committed a sin, and you were ostracized for things like that. And I always, by that time in my life, I knew that was wacky. But Disney movies involve magic. Magic is of Satan. So basically, it's this black and white thinking that anything that is not biblical is of the devil. And
Yeah, and for Mark Fry, how do they teach not to be part of the world but have a TV show? So the father said it came to them, and it was their ministry. And actually, they very rarely, if ever, saw themselves on TV. They got to see some rough cuts.
He was there to justify it.
He rationalized making all that money and not sharing it with anyone.
When it serves a purpose, then it's a ministry. Assign a label and it makes a good. Why? Because dad said so. And dad's one step below Bill Gothard and God. So, you know, it's, you know, of course. Your thoughts in the comment section of this segment. We'd love for you to do that. The links are in the description, Substack and YouTube. We'll continue that there. Jill Duggar spent years in therapy before she could talk openly about her childhood. This last week, she made a statement condemning Joseph's alleged abuse and supporting the victim. Jill is just one of hundreds of thousands who grew up in IBLP, most of whom have never been on TV or had a public voice. This conversation is going to be looking at what people need to recover from such a system and what those involved right now need most. We were kind of talking about this a little bit in our last segment. Jill is one who was able to see the light, if you will, and get out. Something struck her that this is off. This is wrong. This is not the way I want to live. This is not the way I want to raise my family or continue existing in the world. And we talked about ways that people can get in there, can inspire the existing ones to see the light and to see that there's a world outside of this cult-like system that they're growing up in. When you have something like this, a family that is so dug in, they're the Duggars, is it in a situation like this, and to anybody else out there who may be in a similar type situation, who has a family member that's still stuck in one of these cult-like things, is it incumbent upon that person to try and help get the other family members out, to help them see the light? Because it is such a brick wall, because there is not a lot of other influences or voices going in there that can help inspire these people to see reality, to educate them. If you are one of the few people who may be able to infiltrate that somewhat covertly, not going in there going, "Mom and Dad are crazy," but slowly get in there and show them, what sort of responsibility exists, if any, to those who have escaped it, to help their siblings, maybe I'm being extreme, maybe I'm not, survive and move into a life that isn't prone to this sort of chaos?
I think it's a wonderful thing to do, but some of the, let's say you have a family with a lot of siblings and you're the person that is broken free from it, there are going to be some of your siblings who may be ready to hear a dose of reality, and they may be questioning. Often this is the person or the people who are really suffering. Because what happens, particularly to women in these kind of systems, they struggle with depression, but they never admit it because it's not safe to talk about it. It's not safe to have any other emotional expression other than joy. You're supposed to be joyful all the time. And so often people are struggling and suffering, and sometimes those are the people that you can connect with. There's a bit of an open door there. But there are people who are so rigid and so indoctrinated, they're not going to listen, and they're going to get angry if you even try. So you sort of have to feel your way through that. But I think it's a wonderful thing to do, to try and get in there, bond with someone, and have a very heart-to-heart connection that may help the door crack open so that they can start to see a way out and start to develop a sense of, you know what, this really is making me unhappy.
It's like the Matrix. Some people are ready to be rescued from the Matrix, and other people just want to stay in the Matrix because it's warm and comfortable and cozy.
Very much.
Well, and that's interesting. I mean, because when you talk about it, you know, the safety and security, those are two very important things to every single human being out there, regardless of how you were brought up or your religion. But safety and security, how you define that is going to be an individual thing to everybody. And the way that it's been defined and bred fed basically into these people is the umbrella system. Is dad is end all be all. What he says is it. He is the safety and security. And when dad's telling you that, you know, no, the outside people here telling you this is bad, don't listen to them. But when you actually do get out of it, let's say, you know, like Jill, I don't know Jill. I'm not trying to speak for her in any way, shape or form, but I would imagine that would have been a struggle for a while for anyone that's escaping that sort of a system of where your default is safety and security means dad. It means this overpowering, overwhelming system that is going to tell you yes, no, right, wrong, and that's it. And there's no gray area. When that's then eliminated from your life and dad's not there to do that, that is a scary prospect. That threatens your safety and security, because what had actually been your safety and security all that time was truly the biggest threat to your well-being. But you called it your safety and security. Yeah. You didn't know it. So you have to redefine a lot of these terms. That has got to be a very complicated thing to do. A lot of adults who grew up in IBLP describe having no idea what normal looks like. They never made an autonomous decision, never owned their own body, never developed an independent identity. What is the actual clinical work of building a self that was never allowed to form when you're an adult?
It's really, that's a perfect word, you know, because that group has become their identity. They don't have a very strong sense of self. And again, that will vary from person to person. But I think when I work with clients like that, and going back to my own experience, it's number one, helping them recognize their own emotions, their own internal emotional experience, because you're taught to deny it. I remember being 14 years old and I had a sticky note on the mirror in my bathroom: the only reason I'm alive today is to serve God in all I do. And so that was, don't have a self, don't feel your feelings. Feelings were dangerous. Thinking was dangerous, right? You just repeat Bible verses in your head all the time. So clinically, you have to get beyond all that. What do you really feel? What do you really think when you step back from this? And that can be really earth-shaking, but really wonderful at the same time. It can feel like a weight off as people start to get a sense, you know, I do have my own thoughts. I do have my own feelings. And sometimes it can happen pretty rapidly, although the echoes linger. You know, they can linger for a lifetime. That old programming can pop back up every now and then. But I think overall, it's a wonderful process for people when they have some support and some help. And the right therapist who understands these kind of systems can really make a big difference for them.
Yeah, how do you build back? And I can't imagine the challenge, and as a therapist, Siobhan, of building back from being crushed. So, you know, in all these situations, in Jill's situation, and when you have this aha moment, they were taught from the moment of birth all the way up that it's all about service, it's all about relationships, our relationship with God, and it's all about being about others, especially from the father figure taking care of the daughter. So always take, you know, they trusted dad to always do good by the family. And then you have literally a bone-crushing moment when that critical thinking comes in, and that critical thinking, what it really is doing, it's exposing the fact that they're not actually acting in my best interest. They're treating me as an object for their own gain.
Yeah.
How do you help someone come back from that and have them feel valued again? Because really, all of a sudden, they were devalued by that group, organization, individual that said their entire lives that you're valued as an individual, you're valued as a daughter, you're valued as a child of God. And all of a sudden, I was just a means to the end.
Yeah. I think that's the point that a lot of people cut off their families. They at least cut them off for a period of time. And some people cut them off permanently because they want to individuate, they want to separate from the families. And it's really helpful to have a new peer group. There are a lot of support groups for people who are ex-fundamentalists, you know, who can support each other through that. And that's, I think it's surprising sometimes to see how quickly people grow and develop that self that they never did before. And it's possible. I always encourage people to, you know, to embrace life, to embrace new things, embrace new people, read all the books that you weren't allowed to read before. And it's like the world opens up, and it's just wonderful to feel like you really are recreating yourself.
And I think that, that you make such a good point of understanding why these support groups are so important, because you're literally cut off from feeling like you're valued by anyone to actually zero. You're going from 100 to zero. And so actually kind of being reabsorbed back into a healthy group where you're seen and valued and you can start moving forward again is so critical.
Well, and I would imagine a lot of them feel like they're the only one doing this. I mean, they've already been told, you know, it's equivalent to witchcraft and crack cocaine and everything horrible in the world for having different opinions or thinking slightly differently or questioning, just asking the damn question. Does this make sense? So feeling alone and isolated, you know, that's if you break apart, that's what they want, because that'll bring you back. That's part of how the system is designed. So having that support is invaluable to someone who finds themselves in that that sort of a situation. Jill has said that she needs strict boundaries with her parents for her own mental health. I think, you know, almost anyone, whether they had a fundamentalist family like this or just a religious family, and let's say they're just not super down with that anymore as they go back for the holidays, there's always going to be some level of conflict and differences from parent to child or family member to family member. But this is quite an extreme one. Once you've left a system like this and you're able to look back at the damage, when you walked away, you might have gone, oh, yeah, that looks, you know, it was a bit of a flood, you know, they picked up the pieces and things are good. And then you spend a few years and you look back at the damage you walked away from and you're like, oh God, that was Hurricane Andrew. It was horrific what I walked away from. It's not even something you'd be like, oh, you know, how you doing? It's gotta be difficult to have any sort of relationship with people like this and have boundaries, because that sort of a system doesn't know boundaries,
right?
From the parental aspect down, because again, the dad, the mom can kind of do anything they want according to the system, and so the bounds are not there, and they don't need to necessarily respect the wishes of the child because they're below them. It's all hierarchical. Is in a situation like this, is there ever truly a way to maintain or have any semblance of a relationship when you are no longer practicing the bullshit and the family is still 1,000% seeped in it as a way of life?
I think most people in those extreme cases do the cutoff with the family. Maybe they will correspond with an occasional email, how you doing, but they really do not spend time together. They don't go home for holidays. That's just most of the time. I never try to mandate to people, you know, the right way to do it. I think everybody has to sort of feel that through themselves. But occasionally, I'm thinking of one friend who she says, I just let it all roll off. You know, she sees her parents maybe once a year for a couple hours and they try to preach at her and she knows it's coming and she just ignores it and lets it roll off. But they're never going to listen to her. They don't care about her point of view. But I think probably the majority of people just say, I can't take this. And if the parents are rigid and won't respect boundaries, like, let's not talk about religion, you know, and the parents do it anyway, it's pretty rough for people.
And they, I mean, some of the modality there is the parents believe their salvation depends on on spreading the word and forcing it down someone else's throat. And so they have a different motivation. That motivation is not the well-being of the child. No. It just goes back to their own self-preservation at the end of the day. And that seems to be the problem with so many of religions, is it ends up being 100% about self-preservation while being marketed as it's all about everybody else.
Right.
And isn't it amazing that here it is that you're in a group, an organization that is saying it's about service and evangelizing and spreading the word, and yet your own children won't take that word, and yet you're now making the choice to allow your children to distance themselves from you because you're prioritizing that. So in other words, you're being selfish in not focusing on your children first. It just, again, it's so incongruous with what they're saying. It's still just
mental gymnastics.
Yeah, and it shows that this whole thing is really twisted, and it's about narcissistic spirituality, right?
That's a good term.
it's true. It's abusive spirituality, and it's really about the individuals at the top of the chain here. It's not about love. It's not about serving. It's not about, you know, helping your children develop. It's all about them and the boosting of their own ego and their own sense of righteousness.
It's interesting. Every time we come across cases like this, I'm reminded of the movie. I think it's called The Heretic. It's a creepy thriller horror movie, but it really comes down to this guy in the movie just researching and researching and researching the most ancient religion on the face of the planet in our species. And it is a religion of control.
Mm. Yeah. And the mental gymnastics that need to be done to participate in it with a straight face. It certainly is the Circus of the Stars over there on the compound.
Circus of the Stars.
You like that one? I thought I'd go for a deep one. Circus of the Stars
and
the mental gymnastics with the narcissist spiritually bankrupt folks that we're talking about. Let's talk about one more thing on this. The 14-year-old girl who's a victim that really has brought this whole damn thing back to light. She was 9 when this took place. We don't know. You know, these are allegations against Joseph. He's allegedly admitted to them on the phone. The hearings, all that, have yet to take place. So it is what it is. Everything's innocent until proven guilty. What are the odds this is the only one? I mean, statistically speaking here, I don't think it was one day. He's like, I wonder what it would be like if I took a blanket over here and went to this 9-year-old and started touching her inappropriately. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking this might be a pattern because folks like that aren't necessarily created in a vacuum. Yeah. I'm going to guess there's a lot of other victims out there. Again, I don't know it. I'm not saying there is, but I'm saying statistically, odds-wise, there probably is. Is this just the tip of the iceberg of maybe might we finally be seeing the final destruction of the Duggars with what may come out after this this allegation? Because this is not that it's anything small, but this is more extreme and even more disturbing, I would say, I think, to a lot of folks than the CSAM material that Josh had in his computer. This is actual action as an adult. Mm-hmm. Against a child, predatory behavior, human to human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the first thing that came to my mind, is that usually when there's one victim who comes forward, you investigate and eventually other victims come forward too. And it's also possible that, as I said, some of them will be male victims. It's probably just the tip of the iceberg.
Is there any way the Duggars can save them? Like if you're looking at it, you know, right now and you're going, okay, PR is going to be a big part of this for them as they navigate. They can either dig in deeper, which they seem to have always done. We love our family. We love our kids. We're not going to say much. We're going to go hide in our cult. That may be the end of it. I mean, this could also be if the Duggars love their money and they love the attention. I don't know that they do. I'm just speaking, you know, out loud here. But if they really want to truly make a difference, I mean, you could totally use this as a, we were duped moment. We were, as a family, we went into this religion thinking this way and that way, and we were deceived. My goodness, let's call all of this out. It could really be a total changing learning moment for the world, and I'm sure that's not going to happen. But how PR-wise, you know, do you think this should be handled on the part of those who didn't, aren't charged with any crime here, but are in proximity to this and clearly have a track record of covering up this sort of behavior in the past with family members?
Yeah, we hope that more people speak out. We've got to do what you're doing, keep shining a light on it. And my guess is that over time, this kind of exposure will have a really positive impact. And it's got to be shaking people in the organization up to realize that, you know, the blinders are coming off. And as I say, it only takes a few people to start questioning to start seeing a shift in groups like this.
One can only hope. One can only hope. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. Have you been a victim of the IBLP or a coercively controlling religious organization? We'd love to hear your story. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be sharing theirs in the comments as they find this and going, oh, this seems familiar. Please do. There's a great community here that would love to hear your story and can probably commiserate as well. So in the comments, we'll continue our conversation there. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're getting podcasts as well. Siobhan's book, if you want to check it out, highly recommended. Nightbird, she shares her stories in it.
Do
of
it.
Growing up in that sort of an environment. And Robin's new book as well, It's Not All About Me, available also wherever books are sold. All right, until next time, for Siobhan, Robin, and Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.